We're very pleased to continue our study at this time in the 14th chapter of 1 Samuel. Last time we'd gotten through the 7th verse, and the setting for this passage is that Jonathan, the son of Saul, and his armor-bearer are going up against the Philistines. They're going on a mission that only the two of them know about. They seem to feel that God has directed them to do this. They feel very strongly that God is going to be able to save them, even though there's only two of them. And this army of the Philistines is located at Michmash at a very critical pass in the mountains of this area. And it's difficult to get to them because of the natural fortification. But we see that Jonathan and this young man that is with him get through the passageway. And in verse 7, his armor-bearer said unto him, "Do all that is in thine heart, turn thee, behold, I am with thee according to thine heart." So the armor-bearer is with him all the way, the two of them up against this garrison of the Philistines, which contains untold thousands of men. Now at this time, Saul and his men are over at the rock Rimmon. They're more or less hidden out. There's only 600 men there, and Saul has a priest with him, Ahiah, and they're kind of in a state of limbo at the present. They're not strong enough in numbers to be able to attack. And they even are very doubtful about being able to defend themselves if they are attacked by the Philistines. But here we have now Jonathan, Saul's son, and his armor-bearer going up against the Philistine. Verse 8, "Then Jonathan said, Behold, we will pass over unto these men, and will discover ourselves unto them." So the plan is, they're going to make themselves known to the Philistines. They're going to discover themselves unto the Philistines. Let the Philistines see them. And then the way the Philistines react when they see them, that will determine to Jonathan what they should do. That'll be a sign to him whether they should go on and attack or whether they should just stand their ground. So he says in verse 9, "If they say thus unto us, Tarry until we come to you, then we will stand still in our place and will not go up unto them. But if they say thus, Come up unto us, then we will go up, for the Lord hath delivered them into our hand, and this shall be a sign unto us." So he was just going to respond in whatever way the Philistines reacted to their presence. If they told him to stand, then they would stand still. But if they told him to come on up, then they would go and attack. And he said that'll be a sign that the Lord hath delivered them into our hand. He was going to depend upon their reaction to determine what he and his young armor-bearer would do. So verse 11, "And both of them discovered themselves under the garrison of the Philistines, and the Philistines said, Behold, the Hebrews come forth out of the holds where they have hid themselves." So when the Philistines saw them, they made fun of them. They derided them. They said, "Look, here are the Hebrews. They're crawling out of the holds where they've hid themselves." They were accusing the Hebrew army of being a coward, of being hiding and acting like some lowly animal that would crawl in and out of a hole. And so they were making fun of Jonathan and his armor-bearer. "And the men of the garrison answered Jonathan and his armor-bearer and said, Come up to us, and we will show you a thing." So they invited him to come on up. "Come up, we'll show you a thing. We're going to educate you. We're going to get better acquainted with you in a way that they didn't think Jonathan would like. And Jonathan said unto his armor-bearer, Come up after me, for the Lord had delivered them into the hand of Israel." So Jonathan took this as a sign that he and his friend could successfully attack these Philistines. Now notice what he says, "The Lord has delivered him into the hand of Israel." He doesn't just limit this to being delivered into the hands of he and his friend. He says into the hand of Israel, because he at this time is standing for Israel. He's fighting for Israel. And he looks upon himself as being the representative of Israel in this particular conflict, and of course he is. So verse 13 says, "And Jonathan climbed up upon his hands and upon his feet, and his armor-bearer after him. And they fell before Jonathan, and his armor-bearer slew after him." So Jonathan had to climb up this rock. It was a slippery, more or less treacherous formation. But he climbed up on his hands and feet, and his armor-bearer came with him. And then they attacked this group of the Philistines, and they fell before Jonathan and his armor-bearer. They were able to attack and be successful and to bring about a slaughter. And that first slaughter with Jonathan his armor-bearer made, was about 20 men, within, as it were, a half acre of land, which is a yoke of oxen might plow. So it seems that as Jonathan attacked and knocked the men down, his armor-bearer came after him and completed the slaying. And this was done within a very small space of ground. It's described here as a half acre of land, and the old way of measuring land was to measure it by the amount that a yoke of oxen could plow in a day. And so it's probably just a proverbial saying to determine that this was done in a very small space. So here these two men of God have now overcome 20 men. And notice the effect this has on the rest of the Philistine camp. Verse 15, "And there was trembling in the host, in the field, and among all the people. The garrison and the spoilers, they also trembled, and the earth quaked, so it was a very great trembling." So this brought about a tremendous amount of fear among the rest of the Philistines. Now, they had the spoilers that were going out and raiding the Israelites, and this had probably reduced some of the strength of the camp, but nevertheless, there should have been an adequate number there to have overcome Jonathan. But they were overcome by fear. You know, a group of people can only be as successful as they are able to think that they can be. And here this army, no matter how mighty it was, being overcome by fear, was powerless against Jonathan and his armor-bearer. They were undergoing a very great quaking and trembling. And the earthquake, now this was another assistance that God gave. He made the earth to quake, which would certainly get the attention of the rest of the Philistines. They couldn't ignore that fact either. They just lost 20 men, and now the earth was quaking. And so it was a very great trembling, with the people being afraid and trembling, and the earth quaking also. So this had a devastating effect on this Philistine garrison, and it was caused by the bravery of Jonathan and his armor-bearer, who depended upon God to help them as they made their attack. In verse 16, we see what is happening back in Saul's camp. "And the watchmen of Saul in Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude melted away, and they went on beating down one another." So the watchmen of Saul's camp were observing the fact that there was a great commotion over in this Philistines' camp. They looked and they saw that the multitude melted away. That is, it was like the sun shining upon snow. They were vanishing. They were disappearing. They were leaving. And they were beating down one another in the confusion of the battle, the trembling of the earth, and the victory that Jonathan and his servant had. They began to attack one another. They thought anybody might be an enemy that stood in their way. So they were fighting against each other and beating down one another. So here they were the only ones with swords besides Saul and Jonathan. The rest of the Israelites didn't have any swords. But the Philistines were very secure in their swords and their weapons. But now we see that they're turning them on each other. So God can take these carnal weapons that we depend upon and use them against us. Even though we have them and think that we can be secure with them, when God's against us, even our own weapons then may be turned against us. Verse 17, "Then said Saul to the people that were with him, Number now, and see who has gone up from us." In other words, Saul is trying to determine who is responsible for this. Who is attacking these Philistines? Who's causing them to be in such a state of confusion? Do we miss anybody from the camp? Muster the men. Take a roll call. See who's gone from us. And when they numbered, behold, Jonathan and his armor-bearer were not there. The only two missing that should have been there were Jonathan and his armor-bearer. So they realized then that these two men were bringing about this great confusion and this great consternation among this mighty army of the Philistines. Verse 18, "And Saul said unto Ahiah, Bring hither the ark of God." Now, Saul is going to consult with the priest. He wants to find out what his course of action should be. He's now, at long last, seeking some divine guidance. And it's a strange thing indeed that some, when they get into trouble, want to turn to God for help, but they never turn to God to ask what their duty is. They never turn to God to see how they can better serve Him. They only want God to be the one serving them. But this seems to be part of the case with Saul here. But now that the trouble is upon him, he turns to this priest, and he's going to seek some help from God. And he asks that they bring the Ark of God. And maybe he thinks that by having the Ark of God in his presence, that he'll have a better chance of getting an answer from God and have a closer connection with God through this priest to having God to give him an answer and some help. And the rest of verse 18 says, "For the Ark of God was at that time with the children of Israel." The Ark, as we know, was located at Kirjath-Jearim after it had been recovered from the Philistines. And this passage doesn't say that the Ark was ever actually brought, but Saul did request that it be brought. And but we're going to see that this conference that he has with the priest is cut short. Verse 19, "And it came to pass, while Saul talked under the priest, that the noise that was in the host of the Philistines went on and increased." So here, while Saul was actually talking to the priest and trying to get some kind of an answer, some kind of guidance as to what to do, that the noise from the camp of the Philistines increased and grew so loud that it seemed to interrupt him. And so he saw that he would have to go ahead and take some kind of action. Now was the time to act. There was no longer any time in his mind to consult with his priest. And Saul said unto the priest, "Withdraw thine hand." Now it's a little difficult to know exactly what this means when he tells the priest to withdraw his hand. Some say that it means that the priest is to no longer pray to God and seek any more guidance, that he's to stop prayer, since Saul has forbidden him to hold his hands up in an attitude of prayer to God. While others think that this simply means that Saul is just telling the priest that I'm going to withdraw my conference with you. I have to go ahead and act now, and so you're no longer needed in the way of consultation. And Saul and all the people that were with him assembled themselves, and they came to the battle. So now we see that not only is it Jonathan and his servant, his armor bearer, but Saul and his army now, what is left of them, are rallying around and coming to the battle. It seems that now is the time to strike while the iron is hot. Now is the time to really be able to accomplish the victory. And of course, it's only because Jonathan and his servant had taken the initiative, had gone in with the help of God, and had begun the defeat of this mighty Philistine army. And the army of Saul would have certainly been cowards indeed had they not followed this lead of Jonathan and gone in and helped then with the routing of the Philistines. And we see ourselves today in our spiritual battles in a very similar position. Christ has taken the initiative. He has defeated the enemy for us. And so if we then do not take advantage of what he's done for us, if we do not move in and advantageously consummate the victory that is ours for the taking, if we will just but have it, then we are cowards indeed. And so they assembled themselves and came to the battle, and behold, every man's sword was against his fellow, and there was a very great discomfiture. Now this is a further description of the fact that the Philistines were fighting against themselves. They were in such a state of panic, such a state of being actually routed, that they were using their swords against each other. And we can readily see how that if somebody is so panic-stricken and he starts to flee and another person happens to be standing in his way and slowing down his ability to escape, then you might mistake this person for an enemy. And here we go then with one man fighting another, both in the same army. Verse 21, "Moreover, the Hebrews that were with the Philistines before that time, which went up with them into the camp from the country round about, even they also turned to be with the Israelites that were with Saul and Jonathan." Now, it's not hard to understand exactly who this is talking about in verse 21, but it seems that the Hebrews that were with the Philistines happened to be those that were captured by them as slaves. And they were there against their will. They were slaves to the Philistines, actually captured by them. And now that they see the Philistines are in a state of panic and being routed, they then are turning against their captors. Now, there are some who think that these Hebrews were voluntarily working for the Philistines and were more or less traitors to the country. And then when they see the state of the Philistines, they turn against them. It's a little difficult to say for sure, but it is a very good possibility that these people were working for the Philistines against their will, and they'd been confiscated by them as slave labor. But now they turned against the Philistines themselves, so we have the Hebrews on all sides are beginning to join this battle against the Philistines once the Philistines start to take flight. Likewise, all the men of Israel, which had hid themselves in Mount Ephraim, when they heard that the Philistines fled, even they also followed hard after them in battle. So now we have all those that had been cowards, those that had hidden, those that had fled. When they had heard about the Philistines' anger, now they are turning and beginning to join the battle, and they're following hard after them in the battle. So Saul is having help come from all sides. The slaves, those that had run and been cowards and hid themselves, his own army, and then the Philistines, of course, are fighting against themselves too. And so there's a very great rout this day in the battle. And so the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle passed over unto Beth-Aven. Now, Beth-Aven is a place located between Michmash and Bethel. And he just simply says here in verse 23 that the Lord saved Israel that day. This is the Lord's doing. They could not have possibly overcome this Philistine army had there not been the involvement of the Lord. If the Lord had not intervened and done the things that were necessary to bring this victory about. So he gets the credit and the glory for having saved Israel that day. And of course, in our own lives, we see that we today are serving this same Lord. He's the same Lord today as he was then. And how many victories do we have that he has given us today? How often does the Lord save us? How many days are we saved by the Lord? And we know that we can have the same victory, the same spiritual success that these Israelites had, because we're depending upon and serving the same Lord. Verse 24, and the men of Israel were distressed that day, for Saul had adjured the people, saying, cursed be the man that eateth any food until evening, that I may be avenged on mine enemies. So none of the people tasted any food. Now here we see a command of Saul that had in some ways some wisdom about it, but also in some ways it was a rather foolish command. He made a rule that the people couldn't eat any food until evening, so that they would be better able to pursue after the enemy and not be detained by stopping along the way and eating when they should be fighting the battle. Now this had some wisdom about it, in that it would be wise, of course, for the people not to spend too much time feasting and eating when they should be fighting. But it also had a disadvantage in that it caused the people to be very weak. It caused them to be distressed when they should have had an abundance of energy, when they should have had the ability to fight and carry on a lot of activity. Here they were held back by the fact that they were very, very hungry. And the most unwise part of this whole rule seems to be the fact that he made a curse out of it. He said, cursed be the man that eateth any food until evening. So surely there could have been a lesser punishment placed upon someone in this army that did eat, rather than place a curse upon them and the penalty of death. It seemed that Saul, by being king, did have the power to do this all right, but from our viewpoint, he seemed to have overstretched his power and made too stern of a rule here over such a small matter. So verse 21:4 says, so none of the people tasted any food. And they, all of the land, came to a wood, and there was honey upon the ground. Now as we know, this land of Israel was a land of milk and honey. It was a land that they would be able to take honey from the rocks. Deuteronomy 32:13 speaks of them taking honey out of the flinty rock. And what probably happened is that in this wood, the Philistine army, having fled ahead of the Israelite army, may have discovered this honey and had broken open some of the hives. And now the honey was dripping out on the ground. And So when the Israelites came, there was honey upon the ground. And when the people were come into the wood, behold, the honey dropped. But no man put his hand to his mouth, for the people feared the oath. Now Saul had made an oath and placed a curse upon anyone who violated this rule of not eating. Verse 27, but Jonathan heard not when his father charged the people with the oath. Now here comes Jonathan along, and he is totally ignorant of this oath that has been given by Saul. He didn't hear it, and so he's acting in a state of ignorance, and from that standpoint then, he is rather innocent because he doesn't flagrantly and deliberately disobey his father's demand. But here he comes and he sees the honey. Wherefore he put forth the end of the rod that was in his hand and dipped it in a honeycomb and put his hand to his mouth, and his eyes were enlightened. Now he did eat of some of this honey, and he was in such a state of hunger that the honey very greatly refreshed him. And the description here is that his eyes were enlightened. Then answered one of the people and said, thy father straitly charged the people with an oath, saying, cursed be the man that eateth any food this day. And the people were faint. So Jonathan is now informed that he is under this curse, that his father has made an oath that anyone that eats would be placed under the curse. And now he just violated the oath. And he is now automatically under the curse. And Jonathan is informed of this. And the people were faint. That is, the people didn't eat. They remained hungry. And they're very faint. Then said Jonathan, my father hath troubled the land. See, I pray you how mine eyes have been enlightened, because I have tasted a little of this honey. So Jonathan declares that it's not a fair oath. It's not a fair rule that he's made, because just look how this honey has refreshed me, and you'd be a better army today if you also had a similar type of refreshing. So Jonathan simply declares here that it was very poor wisdom for Saul to have made an oath like this. And he reasons along the lines that, look how much good it's done me. And he further says in verse 30, how much more if happily the people had eaten freely today of the spoil of their enemies which they found, for had there not been a much greater slaughter among the Philistines? If the people had been allowed to have eaten, they'd had more strength, and they would have even done a better job of fighting the Philistines. Well, we're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.